Good afternoon. The Secretary General will start with opening remarks about the sessions this morning, and then he will be happy to take your questions. Secretary General.
Good afternoon. We have just finished a productive meeting of the NATO foreign ministers. We began with a wide-ranging discussion about Russia and the long-term security implications of its foreign and defense policies. We agreed that our dual-track policy of strong deterrence and defense combined with meaningful dialogue is the right one. For 70 years, NATO has protected allies, but at the same time, we see more attempts to intimidate and destabilize, including cyber attacks, efforts to undermine our democratic institutions, disinformation and propaganda, and even the use of chemical weapons in Salisbury. So we must continue to show solidarity and resolve. We need to further strengthen our resilience, and we need to develop stronger tools to deal with these hybrid threats. At the same time, NATO remains committed to dialogue with Russia. Our Supreme Commander for Europe, General Scaparotti, met with the Russian Chief of Defense, General Gerasimov, last week to discuss military posture and exercises and increased predictability and transparency. And we continue to work toward the next meeting of the NATO-Russia Council. When tensions are high, our dialogue is more important than ever. Today, NATO ministers also address developments across the Middle East and North Africa. We discussed the situation in Syria. All allies strongly condemn the repeated use of chemical weapons by the Assad regime. And we support the efforts, led by the United Nations to achieve a lasting political solution to the conflict in Syria. We also made progress in our preparations to launch a new training mission in Iraq at the summit in July to help Iraqi forces fight terrorism, stabilize their country, and prevent the reemergence of ISIS. Today, we agreed on the concept of operations for our mission. This will include several hundred personnel. They will train Iraqi instructors and develop Iraqi military schools so that our expertise can reach thousands of others. We also discussed a new capacity building package for Tunisia and the implementation of a new package of support for Jordan. We already support them with training in areas such as special forces, intelligence, and countering improvised explosive devices. We are now looking into working with them in new areas, border security, demining, and security sector reform. Our aim is to help manage crisis in the region, to build the resilience of our partners so we can help prevent crisis from occurring, and to increase our own deterrence and defense when dealing with challenges from our southern neighborhood. This afternoon, we will address Afghanistan, our biggest training mission, an important part of NATO's contribution to fighting terrorism and projecting stability. Today also marks a historic meeting on the Korean Peninsula. NATO fully supports a political solution to the tensions in the region. And I saw for myself how deep those tensions are when I recently visited South Korea and the demilitarized zone. So I welcome the meeting today between the two leaders. The progress they have made and the commitment they have shown to resolving their differences peacefully. And with that, I'm ready to take your questions.
Okay, we'll start with Washington Post, just behind you. No, behind you. Behind you. Thank you.
Hi, thanks. Michael Birnbaum from the Washington Post. This is, of course, Secretary Mike Pompeo's, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's first trip to NATO as Secretary of State. Within the United States, he seemed as much better aligned with President Trump's foreign policy agenda than Rex Tillerson was, and I think the State Department is quite excited to be more back in the game. I'm wondering, just wanted to ask your sense whether you feel as though there's more business to be done with the State Department, with U.S. diplomats, with Mike Pompeo's arrival as the new secretary. Thanks.
First of all, it was a great pleasure to welcome Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to Brussels this morning. He actually jumped on a plane just after he was sworn in, and he was able to address the North Atlantic Council, the foreign ministers of NATO, just 12 hours and 34 minutes after his confirmation. And I think that's actually a new record. And it also shows his strong personal commitment to the alliance, and it reconfirms the commitment of the United States and President Trump to the transatlantic bond. We had time for a short bilateral meeting this morning. That was very good and very useful. And we addressed both the preparations for the upcoming summit in July. We addressed Russia, deterrence and defense, and how we can strengthen NATO presence in Iraq with a new training mission. So I really look forward to working with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. His long and varied experience, including serving as a soldier in Germany during the Cold War, provides him a perfect background for being the top diplomat of the United States, and I look very much forward to working with him.
Wall Street Journal.
I wonder if there was any, from Secretary Pompeo, you heard any different shift in the U.S. stance on dialogue with Russia. And I wonder if there were any concrete ideas from this meeting to the point you made about addressing Russia's hybrid activities, those activities that fall short of invoking Article 5 but are disrupting countries within the alliance.
So we had a discussion now on Russia and the challenges we see related to a pattern of behavior of Russia over years. And part of that, or an important part of that, is also how to address hybrid threats. And we all agreed that we need to continue to pursue the dual-track approach, strong deterrence, strong defense, combined with dialogue. But we also focus very much on the need to strengthen our efforts when it comes to hybrid activities. Much of what we have already done is also already done to increase our deterrence and defense is also highly relevant for hybrid threats. For instance, meaning the presence in the eastern part of the alliance, higher readiness of forces, better intelligence, improved situational awareness, but also, for instance, strengthening our cyber defenses. All of that is relevant for meeting and responding to hybrid threats. But we will do more, building on what we have already done. We will, as we prepare for the summit, look into how we can further strengthen our abilities to respond to those threats, which don't trigger Article 5, but at the same time is a challenge to NATO allies, and we have seen many examples of that with cyber attacks, with interference, meddling in our domestic political processes, and also, for instance, the use of chemical weapons, or a nerve agent in Salisbury.
BBC.
Thank you very much, Secretary General. I'm Jonathan Marcus from the BBC. Two quick points. I mean, firstly, you talk about Russia's pattern of destabilization and intimidation. One of the most significant things they've been doing is attempted intrusions into election campaigns. How much of a problem is it that in the United States, where they've had perhaps one of their most significant efforts to intrude into the electoral process, the president of the United States doesn't actually appear to acknowledge that that is a serious problem at all. And then the second question, some have suggested that in some strange way or in some new way, Russia is already at war with the alliance in one sense or another. How would you characterize the policy of Russia towards NATO countries? Is there any sense below that Article 5 threshold that Russia is in any sense at war with NATO?
First, about meddling in domestic political processes. We have seen a pattern in many countries and in many different NATO allied countries that there has been attempts to meddle, to interfere in democratic political processes, including in inter-election campaigns. U.S. authorities are now looking into the question of meddling into the U.S. Election campaign in 2016. It's not for me to comment on the specific issues which are now addressed by the U.S. authorities, but I think it's important that all allies look into different attempts to try to meddle with election campaigns, with democratic processes. We work with Russia to try to improve our relationship. And we are in a situation where we have not been before, because we're not in the old Cold War, but we are neither in the strategic partnership we tried to build after the Cold War. So this is something new. And therefore, it is even more important that we are able to combine both to be firm, to be strong, and to have a clear message and convey unity in our approach to Russia, but at the same time keep the challenge for dialogue open. And over just the last few weeks, we have seen how the NATO alliance is able to respond. We responded quickly after the Salisbury incident, issued a very clear statement, and also all NATO allies supported the expulsion of Russian officials after the Salisbury incident. And we also agreed and issued a very clear statement after the use of chemical weapons in Syria. So I think we have shown both the ability to act and to stand united, but also to continue to strengthen our deterrence and defense.
We have Arabia.
General, I have a question. Nordin Fridi from Al Arabiya News Channel. I have a question about the Iran nuclear deal. In itself, this agreement is a big deal and a big diplomatic achievement. But there are serious concerns in the region and also outside about what comes after 2025, 2030, when the restriction will be lifted, plus the problem of the ballistic missiles and the Iran involvement in many conflicts in the Middle East. How to address the current concerns regarding the involvement of Iran in the Middle East plus its ballistic missile issue? And also, if you can say a few words, how do you see the future of this nuclear deal after 2030 when the restriction will be lifted? Should this agreement be completed by another one? Thank you.
NATO welcomed the Iran nuclear deal when it was agreed back in 2015. And at the same time, we called on Iran to fully implement the deal. The deal imposes a number of measures which leads to that Iran is moving further away from developing nuclear weapons. But at the same time, we have highlighted again and again that no deal can be good if it's not fully implemented. And we have also expressed concerns about other activities of Iran, including their destabilizing activities in the region, support for extremist groups and threats to freedom of maritime navigation. And especially NATO allies have expressed their concerns about Iran's ballistic missile program. This is not covered by the Iran nuclear deal, so these are concerns which has to be which have to be addressed outside the deal because they are not covered by the deal as it is today.
Okay, lady in the second row.
Hello, Vladana from Antenna and from Montenegro. I have a question that combines Western Balkan and Russia. With the possible accession of Macedonia to NATO, do you anticipate, the same destabilization efforts that we saw in Montenegro, of course, made by Russia?
Sorry.
Do you expect the same destabilization efforts now in Macedonia when they are near to NATO by Russia? Thanks. So,
first of all, I think what we have seen is that even though Russia has been against enlargement of NATO for many, many years and always or almost always protested when NATO has become bigger with new members, the fact is that we have proven again and again that NATO's door is open. And as I've stated many times, whether NATO will have new members, it's for the Aspen country to decide and the 29 allies. No one else has a say. No one else have any right to try to intervene or to veto such a process. I recently visited Skopje, and I once again clearly stated that NATO is still committed to what we decided back in 2008 in Bucharest, and that is that when the name issue is solved, then we are ready to invite the country to become a member of NATO. And that decision still stands. There are contacts, negotiations going on to try to solve the name issue. I hope that those negotiations can be successfully concluded, and then we will move on. Again, there is a fundamental right for every nation to decide its own path, including what kind of security arrangements we want to be part of.
Okay, NRK, gentlemen, then the fourth row, yeah.
Thank you, NRK, Philip Leit. Secretary General, breaking news from Korea, what do you think has brought about the change that we are seeing today?
The most important thing today is to welcome the fact that they have met. And even though there's a long way to go before we see a full resolution to the crisis and the problems we see on the Korean Peninsula, I think this is a very important first step. I think it's obvious that the pressure which the international community has put on Korea, on North Korea, has been important because NATO strongly supports a political negotiated solution, but that's exactly also why we have welcomed the strong international pressure, the political pressure, the diplomatic pressure, but not least the economic pressure. And what we have seen over the last months is that the United Nations, the Security Council, has been able to agree on tighter and tougher sanctions. And we have also seen that the sanctions have been implemented to a higher degree than before. And I'm absolutely convinced that this strong international pressure has helped to create the situation where we now are. And when I visited the region and I visited South Korea or Japan, it was also a clear message from them that we need to continue the pressure to achieve a political solution. And I also believe that we have to make sure that the sanctions remain in place until we see a real change in the behavior of North Korea. I welcome that we have seen progress and that we have seen that the two leaders have been able to meet. This is a first step. It's encouraging, and then we have to realize that it's still a lot of hard work that lies ahead of us.
Okay, we had a gentleman in the third row.
You told a lot about the incident in Salisbury, and it's important to understand. I'm from Russian radio, Echo Moscow, Arseniy Vesnin. It's important to understand, do you accuse Russia in using the chemical weapon in Salisbury? Do you have evidences, or have you seen them, that it was Russia which used this chemical weapon, or these just suspicions?
We have been briefed by the United Kingdom on their findings and their assessments, and we have no reason to doubt the findings and assessments of the United Kingdom. And we welcome also that the UK is working with the OPCW, the Organization for Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, in the investigation of this horrendous attack. And the attack takes place against the background of a pattern of reckless behavior by Russia. And that's also the reason why all NATO allies reacted the way we did, including by the expulsion of Russian officials from the NATO mission.
Okay. We have one last question. Gentleman over here.
Thank you. This is Mehmet Solmaz from Daily Sabah. My first question is, how was your trip to Turkey in terms of tackling troubled issues? You know, there are the Greek soldiers issue or the S-400s. And my second question is regarding the U.S. Permanent Representative Hutchinson has recently, during this week, said that purchasing S-400s from Russia would have serious consequences. There are also other American voices calling for sanctions on Turkey. And how do you evaluate all these? Thank you.
My visit to Ankara and my meetings with President Erdogan, with the Foreign Minister Çavuşoğlu, and also the Defense Minister was a very useful visit. Turkey is a highly valued ally, and Turkey contributes to our shared security in many different ways, not least in the fight against terrorism. Air bases, infrastructure in Turkey has been key for the efforts of the global coalition to defeat ISIS. And we addressed all those issues in my meetings in Ankara. Then, of course, we also addressed some of the issues where we have seen some differences between NATO allies. For instance, on the situation in northern Syria. NATO is not present on the ground in northern Syria, but we support the efforts of the global coalition, and some NATO allies are, including Turkey, but also the United States. And it was clearly stated during my visit in Ankara that there is now close contact between the United States and Turkey on how to move forward in a way which is as coordinated as possible to avoid any unnecessary problems in northern Syria. When it comes to the S-400, that's a national decision. It's a national decision by any NATO ally to decide what kind of equipment they acquire. What matters for NATO is, of course, the question of whether it's going to be integrated into the integrated NATO air defense system. There has been no request for that. And I think it's obvious that that will be difficult, but there has been clearly no request for that from the Turkish side. Then, we have seen the statements from the United States on possible sanctions. We also discussed that during my visit to Ankara. And again, I welcome the fact that there is now close dialogue and contacts between the United States and Turkey on this issue.
Thank you very much. This concludes this press conference. We weren't able to take all the questions, but the Secretary General will be back later this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you so much.